First Canto, chapter 9, text number 33. Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruitive results. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Sri Krishna, by his own internal pleasure, appears on earth, he does so by the agency of his internal potency. The attractive features of his transcendental body are desired in all three worlds, namely the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Nowhere in the universe are such beautiful bodily features as those of Lord Krishna. Therefore, his transcendental body has nothing to do with anything materially created. Arjuna is described here as the conqueror, and Krishna is described as his friend, Vijaya Sakhe. Bhishma Dev, on his bed of arrows after the battle of Kurukshetra, is remembering the particular dress of Lord Krishna, which he put on as the driver of Arjuna's chariot. While fighting was going on between Arjuna and Bhishma, Bhishma's attraction was drawn by the glittering dress of Krishna, and indirectly he admired his so-called enemy, Arjuna, for possessing the Lord as his friend. Arjuna was always a conqueror because the Lord was his friend. Bhishma Dev takes this opportunity to address the Lord as Vijaya Sakhe, friend of Arjuna, because the Lord is pleased when he is addressed conjointly with his devotees who are related with him in different transcendental humor. While Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna, sun rays glittered on the dress of the Lord, and the beautiful hue created by the reflection of the sun rays was never forgotten by Bhishma Dev. As a great fighter, he was relishing the relation of Krishna in the chivalrous humor. Transcendental relation with the Lord in any one of the different humors, rasas, is relishable by the respective devotees in the highest ecstasy. Less intelligent mundaners who want to make a show of being transcendentally related with the Lord artificially jump at once to the relation of conjugal love, imitating the damsels of Brajadam. Such a cheap relation with the Lord exhibits only the base mentality of the mundaner, because one who has relished conjugal humor with the Lord cannot be attached to worldly conjugal wrath, which is condemned even by mundane ethics. The eternal relation of a particular soul with the Lord is evolved. The genuine relation of the living being with the Supreme Lord can take on any form out of the five principal rasas, and it does not make any difference in transcendental degree to the genuine devotee. Bhishma Dev is a concrete example of this, and it should be carefully observed how the great general is transcendentally related with the Lord. Om Agnate Mirandasya Agnanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Tapi Tam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shishi Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vitam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desatarane Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gaura Trishe Namah. Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandhu, Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta, Namostate, Apta Kanchana Gaurange, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Mukham Karoti, Vanchakalpa Chubhischa, Kripa Sindhu Vyevcha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namo. Okay, thank you all for coming. I saw in the Airplane magazine how Lagos has so much wonderful nightlife you could be enjoying. Right? Such a wonderful place to enjoy. But coming here is special then. Not everybody will want to hear about Krishna. Those who do are very special. Here was stressing the beauty of Krishna. Even on the battlefield, Bhishma was enamored by Krishna's beauty. And it's mentioned that Krishna, even on the battlefield, he looked more like he was in Vrindavan with the gopis. He was very beautiful, always smiling, didn't look like, you know, a madman in a fight. The beauty of Krishna has six opulences. Anybody know what they are? Beauty, wealth,
strength,
fame,
renunciation,
wisdom,
knowledge.
So he proves all those things by speaking the Bhagavad Gita, by all the opulence he had when he was on earth, which is nothing compared to his total, because he owns all the universes. So even when Krishna was on earth and he had so much, there were many other rich people. But he owns everything, but he's not attached to any of it. He doesn't feel like he's something special. But it says the beauty is the most important. Krishna's beauty is the thing that like makes everything else fit and make sense. Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna Varnam Twisha Krishna Sango Pangada Vardhanam Yagnar Sankirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. That Krishna, Lord Chaitanya came like Krishna and always chanting the name of Krishna, Krishna Varnam, but a different color, golden color. And he had his associates and his weapons. And the weapon is described as beauty. Lord Chaitanya was also so beautiful that when he was speaking to the Mayavadi philosophers in Varanasi, they were so overwhelmed by his beauty that they listened very intently to him. They got completely bewildered. Normally Mayavadis would just argue. You know, that's the idea of spiritual discussion, is to just argue. And he was speaking completely against them. But because he was so beautiful, they just were stunned. And every woman, Ramachandra is also so beautiful. Women were just, you know, even when he was born, nobody could have believed how beautiful child. So, and we get some idea when we see our deities around the world. You know, it's quite amazing, right? How beautiful Krishna is. How beautiful his dresses are. Unlimited. So, but our vision is very limited. Still we see this stunning beauty. But I don't know myself anyway. We can be looking at the deity and totally absorbed and how beautiful, and then go out and get attracted to something else. But as we see the Krishna more and more and hear about Krishna more and more, then we won't be attracted to anything else. Mind gets purified, the heart gets purified. Like constant, the more we can chant, Krishna's words are very, his voice very beautiful. Everything about him is very beautiful. You compare his face to the moon, different moons. The eyes are like moons, the face, the half moons, full moons are like lotus. But it says that's really, it's just because those are the most beautiful things in the material world. So we try to give some idea. But Krishna is so much more beautiful. You can't really describe it.
So here we're, you know, people are very concerned with beauty. There's so many, in Kali Yuga, that it's predicted that beauty will be judged by the haircut. So we see that very prominent. Beauty shop. Is that what they call it here? In many countries, the haircutting shop is called the beauty shop. And now in Japan, they have hair and make, hair cutting and makeup, both. Beauty. Any big department store, at least in other countries I've been in, the first floor practically is all cosmetics. And the next couple floors are all women's clothes. Beauty. They want, and they spend so much money. Aesthetic surgery. They want to be beautiful. But you can't, the material body, Prabhupada said, even the most beautiful woman in this world, compared to the women in the heavenly, in the Swargaloka, they look like a frog. He said, if any man in this world saw a woman actually of the heavenly world, a Swarga, he would just faint. Couldn't keep consciousness. And the men also are very beautiful. Krishna is so much more beautiful. He is the source of all the beauty. So that's the most wonderful thing. And so he's very kindly exhibiting his beauty all over the world in temples and pictures. It's stunning, you know, how people can imagine such a beautiful person. So Bhishma, he knew all that. He knew about the gopis, he knew everything. He was attracted to Krishna fighting, you know. Krishna had promised not to fight, and Bhishma said, I'm going to make him break his promise. So he fought so strongly. And Arjuna, he was holding back. He was defending himself, but he wasn't attacking. Krishna got mad. So he jumped off the chariot, and he grabbed a broken wheel of a chariot, and he attacked Bhishma, you know, with his weapon. And his hair got covered with dust, and it looked even more beautiful. His hair was flying all over. Bhishma was very happy to see Krishna in a fighting mood. So that's interesting. And Bhishma, this is at the end, you know, and he's praying that he can think about all these things without any idea of fruitive gain. Even at the end of his life, you know, he's still wanting to be free from any idea of fruitive motivation for doing anything. You can do anything, but it's the motivation, the goal that one sets that makes it karmakanda or gyanakanda or bhakti. You all working, so other people are doing the same work in the office, right? Looks the same, they dress the same, they do the same work. But they're probably karmakandi. They just want to get something. Get that money and think, what will I get for myself? Right? I don't think you have any ganis around. And a few professors here and there. The devotees, They're getting the fruit, but they want it for use for Krishna. Their goal is to do everything for Krishna. So that's a big difference. Now, today is a special day. It's the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada, the founder of ISKCON, founder of Acharya. Very extraordinary acharya in history. His father was Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he did many, many amazing things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching, and he thought, we need a very special preacher. And he prayed for a ray of Vishnu. And then he had this child. So when the child was born, that umbilical cord was wrapped around like a, you know, like Upaniya. So he thought, special baby, and he trained him. And at a very early age, the Ratiyatra cart stopped in front of his house because he was the magistrate of Puri. And the wife, the mother, put the baby at the feet of Lord Jagannath, and the garland fell off right on the baby. So then he really took it that this is a big sign. Getting the garland of the deity is considered very auspicious, a good sign. When Krishnadas Kaviraj went to the deity of Madan Mohan and to ask him if he could write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, while he was paying obeisance, the pujari came and put the garland. So everybody knew, okay, this is the message of the Lord. That's how he tells people. And Krishna felt Bhishma's arrows like flowers. Of course, Krishna can't be hurt. Krishna was dressed very beautifully, like he was in the Rasa dance, even on the battlefield. So, anyway, Bhaktisiddhanta, then he was trained. He'd memorized Bhagavad Gita at 7 years old, could explain it. He was trained in editing. His father was a big writer. And he got initiated. That's an interesting story, but his father told him you have to be initiated by Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. It was a Babaji with no disciples. And a very, very advanced devotee that didn't act in normal ways. But he would come and listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's talks. So Bhaktisiddhanta went to ask him. He said, no, I'm illiterate. And you're a big scholar, and he was a big scholar, famous. I can't initiate you. Go somewhere else. So they went back and told his father. His father said, no, you have to be initiated by him. They went again, and he said, okay, I'll ask Lord Gauranga. Come back later. He came back again. He said, did you ask him? He said, oh, I forgot. So he became very, very determined. And I think he was threatening suicide or something. So Gaur Kishore initiated him. He didn't have any beads. He just put some dust of Mayapur. Gave him the name of Varshabhanavi Devi. Jai Kaya, you know, Varshabhanavi Devi. So Bhaktisiddhanta then he started out in Mayapur. At that time, Mayapur was just farms, village. And he had a little hut, and he took a vow to chant 1 billion names. And that was chanting like Haridas Thakur, 300,000 names a day. That's 192 rounds about. So he did that. It took almost 10 years. But even then he would go and preach around. He'd just get some rice and dal and soak it. That's what he would eat. No cooking. So people were admiring him, of course. The hut, if it would leak, it was very small. They still have it there. Just couldn't stand up. And he had an umbrella if it rained. Then one of his followers, you know, begged him to go to Calcutta and preach. So he started preaching there, and he started what's called the Gaudiya Mutt, the small rented house which we own now. It's been purchased recently. And gradually it became very big and built a big temple in Calcutta. Made many, many sannyasis and opened 64 temples all over India. And Prabhupada met him when he was young, householder. Prabhupada was hesitating because he'd seen so many sadhus who were just bogus. His friend insisted, no, you must come and see this one. Prabhupada was very impressed. As soon as Prabhupada got up from paying obeisances, he said, you're educated, you should preach in English. Spread this mission of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada was a follower of Gandhi, at least it's, he claims he was, his Leela. And he said, but India's not an independent country, how can we preach? First we have to get independence, then we can preach. He said, that doesn't matter. Lord Chaitanya's mission is way above all that. Prabhupada was convinced, accepted him in his heart as his guru. He didn't join up right away. He was young and a new marriage, new child, new job. But he thought about it all the time. Gradually, he made his Back to Godhead magazine. But for Bhaktisiddhanta, he did many, many, of course, at that, you know, the British, their idea was anything that's not English is just savage ignorance, even Sanskrit. You know, it's all just savage. The British were telling everybody in Europe, they were saying, why do you stay in India? They, oh, we have, as soon as we convert them, you know, make them civilized, then we'll leave them alone. But they were stealing everything, all the jewels and all the cloth and whatever they could get out of there, they were stealing, right? Have you ever seen the British Museum in London? They're very proud of it. It's full of deities that they stole from temples. And they're very proud of their museum. They were saying India is so uncivilized. Anyway, he spoke English better than them. So they couldn't, they had to, you know, they couldn't say anything. So he had a big effect. He was at odds with Gandhi, and he was at odds with Subhas Chandra Bose also. Subhas Chandra Bose was telling him, you know, you should give all your brahmacharis for the army to fight the British. He said, these are just weak, you know, sadhus, you don't want them. He wasn't into that. But he did a lot of amazing preaching. One big thing was called dioramas. You know, murti, statues of Krishna pastimes. He made a huge exhibit with something like 150 exhibitions, both Krishna Leela and philosophical things. Covered a few acres. And he did many innovative things. He had one of the, at the time he had a car, it was only 3 cars in India. And he would ride in an open top car and go in the village. So everybody comes to see the car, right? Isn't it? Even now, I guess. When I was a child, my father had a big car. Too big. Huge. The American cars in the 50s, you know, they were so big. So he would take me with when he went to his business in a small town and leave me in the car. You know. And my mother was always telling me to be afraid of everybody, and I had the windows up, and everybody in the town would come and look at the car. I don't know if they even saw me. You know, I would have... Later I realized they're just looking at the car, you know, they've never seen such a car. But can imagine in India when there was only 3 cars. So a sadhu, a sannyasi, is not supposed to even wear shoes. And he would dress up in fancy British clothes with patent leather shoes, you know, meet the big kings and everything. And, you know, and of course he was such a preacher, so intellectual, called a walking encyclopedia, knew everything. And his language was very, very, you know, amazing English, his vocabulary. One of our writers who's PhD and has an amazing vocabulary, but he was studying some writings of Bhaktisiddhanta, said he had to get the dictionary all the time. And the translators had trouble, and they asked some of his disciples, they said, yes, we would ask him, even the Bengali word wasn't in the dictionary, but that's the best word. So he traveled extensively all over India. He had the plans to go to the West, sent disciples to England. They didn't do much, but finally Prabhupada was able to go. He wrote a lot. He had many magazines. He had he had like something like 5 magazines. One was a newspaper daily. And some visitors, they said, how can you have a daily newspaper about spiritual things? So he said, you know, there's in Calcutta, even then, there were several newspapers about the mundane news. You know, here we have so many newspapers, right? And all just full of all the nonsense. And he said, so the spiritual world, there's much more happening, much more. So we could have every hour, we could have every minute edition. Quite a few magazines, newspapers. He wrote in Bengali, wrote in Hindi, wrote in English, wrote in Sanskrit sometimes. Spoke to all kinds of people. He laid out he started the Gaudiya Mutt, but it fell apart after his departure. But here we have somebody compiled quotes from him. These are mostly from letters. He wrote many, many letters. He would get so many letters that there's a post office in Mayapur. It was built just because he was getting so many letters. Otherwise, Mayapur was nothing. But then he started that temple in Calcutta. Then he built the headquarters in Mayapur called the Chaitanya Mutt. And now there's many Gaudiya Mutt, that Gaudiya Mutt, all the different sannyasis make their own. But that was the headquarters. He was absolutely in charge and inspiring everyone. He was lifetime brahmachari. He was a great scholar and a very top astronomer and astrologer. But he left it all behind. He wanted only the spiritual. He dropped out of the university because he thought if he had a degree, too many people would be asking him for jobs. He didn't want to be harassed. Totally dedicated for spiritual things. So these things are all from scripture. You can analyze it. Anyone who does not serve Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is ignorant and a killer of himself. So you'll find that in the Ishapanishad. Asurya namate loka andena tamasavritaha. You know that one? Tamste prechya vidyachanti ye ke chatmahan o janaha. Killer of the soul. But the soul is eternal. Right? Can't be burned. Can't be cut. Can't be drowned. But how can you be a killer of the soul? But their own soul they're killing because they're covering him over so much that he has no idea of his spiritual identity. To learn to tolerate is one of the most important responsibilities of those living in the mutt. That's the temple. Those who perform assorted religious activities cannot serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Sarva Dharma Parichaja Mami Kam Sharanam Braja. Right? Aham Twam Sarva Papebyo Mokshaya Syami Ma Suchaha. Bhagavad Gita, right? 1866. Right? To give up all Dharma, all ordinary religious activities, ritualistic activities, part of society, and give everything and surrender to Krishna, because he's the supreme enjoyer. All the sacrifice, all the yagas, everything's meant for him. So if we're doing everything for Krishna, we don't have to worry. Wherever there's discussion about Hari, that is a place of pilgrimage. So this is a place of pilgrimage now. Yudhisthira told Vidura, you are a place of pilgrimage because you take Krishna wherever you go, you talk about Krishna. So the devotee is a place of pilgrimage. That's why we say carry these books with you all the time. Give them to people. Then you that place becomes a holy place. You don't have to travel so far, right? People that live, you know, in Vrindavan, they think they have to go to the Ganga. People that everybody's going somewhere else, you know, for the pilgrimage. They don't look in their heart. They're looking outside for the highest pleasure, but it's within. Even Krishna there, if you go to Govardhan, there's a Manasi Ganga, the lake now, but it was a big river evidently. And Krishna saw as a child the cowherd men getting ready, packing, getting ready to travel. He said, where are you going? They said, oh, we're going to the Ganga somewhere. And I don't know where they're going, Haridwar or something. Pretty far when you're walking. He said, you don't have to go, Ganga. And immediately the river came from Krishna's mind. Wherever there's Krishna, you don't need to go anywhere else. Wherever there's talks. My advice is don't criticize others. Try to rectify yourself. A pure devotee knows that everyone is the spiritual master. I mean, you can take lessons from everybody. If we want to follow the path of auspiciousness, we should give up the countless opinions of people and only hear the words of the Vedas. It is better to remain in millions of species of birds, beasts, insects, and worms than to become deceitful. One who is free from deceit receives auspiciousness. He was called Singha Guru. He preached so strongly that his disciples, they were afraid to bring, they'd be preaching to some rich man or something, and they'd be afraid to bring him to him because he thought he would be so heavy they would run away. The Mayavadis would run away. When they saw him, they would run away. Nobody wanted to risk a debate with him. When he was very young, his father was asked to speak at a big conference glorifying the brahmanas. So the father was ill and he asked him to speak. So he wrote a paper, something about brahmanas, I don't know, can't remember the name. So when he delivered that paper, he was quoting from the Vedas so many things about the glories of the brahmanas that the brahmanas had never heard before. They were very happy. Then he started talking about how the Vaishnava is better than the Brahman. Vaishnava is Brahma Shastra, better than a Brahman. And then the Vaishnavas, who many were not Brahman by birth, they were becoming very, very happy. So everybody wanted to touch his feet. Of course, the Brahmins weren't so happy. They didn't like that so much. But everybody wanted to touch his feet. So the police, you know, they were guarding him, and then finally the police, they washed his feet, they took the water, and they went out in the crowd and threw it on everybody to satisfy them. So he was that powerful of a preacher and so scholarly. And he studied all the four sampradayas, Ramanuja and the Sri Sampradaya, Vishnu Swami, and the Madhva Sampradaya that he was in. Studied all of them very carefully, traveled extensively. He studied everything. Of course, he understood that Srimad Bhagavatam is everything. We will not stay in this world very long. If this body falls singing the glories of the Lord Hari, then our birth in this body will be successful. The material nature, which is averse to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is an examination hall. It's a test to live here, and spiritual test. Tolerance, humbleness, appreciation of others, are favorable to develop our devotion to Hari. Where does that come from? Yeah, say it loud, say it loud. That's Lord Chaitanya's important instruction for all of us. One has to be more tolerant than a tree, and devoid, and more humble than grass, lower than a straw in the street. We don't see straw in the street very much anymore. You see it in some places where they use horse carts. Nobody cares for straw in the street. One has to feel like I'm not important. And offering all respect to others and not expecting anything in return, devoid of false prestige. Then, Kirtaniya Sadahari, then we can chant all the time. Otherwise, we can't chant all. We try, but it's hard to chant even 16 rounds. Right? How am I going to do that? I don't have time. But if we really had all these qualities, then we could chant all the time, even while living in this world, even while doing all our other work, could be chanting. So although the activities of a devotee and the misdemeanor of a pseudo-devotee appear to be alike, there is heaven and hell difference, like milk and lime water. That's what I'm saying. You're working, so it looks like you're doing the same thing as the other people in the office. But it's not. It's much different. Completely different. So there are many, many things here. Of course, I had the book of letters. There's even more letters. And these are just a couple of sentences here and there. Association is the principal impetus in human life to serve Sri Hari. Due to association of non-devotees, one gets material prosperity. Due to the association of devotees, the spirit soul has gradually becomes absorbed in serving Sri Hari. This is the greatest shelter for the human being. Never become averse to that. Association here is Sadhu Sangha. It's very important, most important thing to inspire us to want to serve Krishna. Is to be around somebody who serves Krishna. When anarthas, that means unnecessary things. Artha means economic development. When they're removed by chanting the holy name, then Krishna's form, qualities, and pastimes will automatically manifest from the name. There's no need to make an endeavor to artificially remember his form, qualities, and pastimes. If we do remember him, very good. Of course, we read about them. We meditate on the deity. We meditate on the form of Krishna also. Because everybody likes beautiful things. The so-called beautiful person will be paid so much money just to show off their body. And they're advertising everywhere, and I'm going to make you beautiful. Right? It's a huge business. One of the biggest business in the world is cosmetic. But then you're not seeing the person. And beauty is only skin deep, they say. The real beauty is the person, the mind, the activities, not just the external covering. But people in Kali Yuga, they're very concerned with externals, decorating the body, how the skin looks, how the hair looks, how the clothes look, how the jewelry looks. I'm very worried about these things. That's why devotees, they keep it simple. We may have to dress, you know, decently in order to work within society, but we don't have to be foppery. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta wrote that. Even about the people in his ashram, no foppery, you know. Sometimes even a brahmachari sannyasi, they want to dress very fancy. No foppery. We don't worry about that. They have all so many fashion, so many clothes, so many shoes. Everything becomes a fashion now. wristwatch, your mini. Not for telling time, just different occasions. Even the eyeglass. Used to be people that were embarrassed to wear glasses when I was young. Now it's a fashion statement, you know. So a woman will have many glasses. Even she doesn't need them, she has. So they can show the name on the phone. So it's crazy. Neckties I saw in Japan and England also. $180. One necktie. You also see them for $1. And from 2 meters away, no one can tell the difference. You have to show the back so they know. But you know. They are more. They do look better. But, you know, it's better cloth. Still, they're always changing. This year you have to have a wide one. Next year has to be a narrow one. So you have to keep buying new clothes all the time. They plan years ahead what will be the color we promote 5 years from now. And they start designing all the clothes just to bewilder people. And then we're hung up looking at all these beautiful things. Beautiful. And they have contests for the most beautiful dog. The most beautiful everything. The most... Well, now, used to be I would see the magazine, the 50 most beautiful women or the 50 most beautiful men. Now they say the most sexy. That beauty is supposed to be, I mean, sexual attractive. And girls go crazy worrying about their beauty. But devotees, they, like one girl came in Japan, she was a Russian girl, she was a model. And so she just came to make money to buy a house or something. She said she, before she met devotees, you know, she was so afraid she would only drink water. She was so afraid of getting fat. And then when she met devotees, she just sweet rice and halva. And she said, still she's a model, nobody cares. And she brought her model friends to the temple and she said, take this, and gave them sweet rice and halva, and they're fine. No more anxiety. So, this is a good one. If I stop preaching the unbiased truth due to fear that people will not like it, I'm accepting the non-Vedic way, rejecting the Vedic way. Then I become an atheist and lose my faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the personification of truth. So, of course, some people don't like it when we preach Krishna is the Supreme Lord, or even you preach, you know, to stop eating meat, you know. What to speak of that you should be chanting Hare Krishna and serving Krishna. But we preach anyway because some people really like it. Many, many people. So right now, all over the world, especially this month, trying to distribute more books. Bhaktisiddhanta started that. He had the printing press. One temple, he put the printing press right next to the deity room so the deity could hear the printing press. He gave it so much importance. He called it the Brihat Mridanga. He said that regular mridanga we can hear for, what, a few meters, no matter how loud you bang on it. But the printing press can be heard all over the world. Books go everywhere and people read, they hear about Krishna. They hear the holy name of the Lord. The devotees, for the pleasure of the Lord, they call out the holy name to render service, not to get their own desires fulfilled. What the ignorant masses understand about Krishna is not the real object of the word Krishna. In other words, God, Allah, and even the Sanskrit word Ishvara, Paramatma, only indicate a great energy coming out of Krishna. They do not indicate the total aspect of the word Krishna. Like the Maha Mantra, there's so many mantras, but Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That is Sarva Mantra Sar. All mantras are in one mantra. The name of Krishna contains all the other names of Krishna. The word Krishna. All the other names, the thousands of names. Like Bhishma Dev, when he first started speaking, after he introduced everybody and, you know, he was lamenting how the Pandavas would suffer when they're so sinless. It must be the will of the Lord. And then he recited the Vishnu Sahasranam. He told Yudhisthira, you see, this is, you think your cousin, you think he's your family member, but then he recited the Vishnu Sahasranam. Try to give some idea what is Krishna. All these different names that describe all the different. But Krishna covers more than that. Parvati asked Lord Shiva, she said, the Vishnu Sahasranam is too much for me, too long. It takes a long time. Is there something I can do that's shorter and easier? So he said, I chant Ram. And by three times Ram, you get the same benefit as the thousand names of Vishnu. Then it's also explained that one Krishna covers for three Rams. So when we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, that mantra is some kind of synergy, like, well, if you eat dal, it's one thing, if you eat rice, it's another, and if you add the two together, according to how many, whatever it is, but if you eat them together, it's more than, you know, all the proteins and all whatever's in both of them. When you mix them, eat them together, you get more than that. So when you put these words together in that way, it's even better than separately. That's the special mercy of Krishna. If we take shelter of the lotus feet of the Guru, spiritual master, we can become free from illusion, fear, and distress. If we wholeheartedly beg for his mercy without any deceit, then the spiritual master bestows all auspiciousness on us. So that's just a few thoughts of Bhaktisiddhanta. There's a very nice book that one devotee wrote about his life, and then another devotee that spoke Bengali, he went around and interviewed many of his disciples and wrote this big three-volume book, which gives a lot of details of all his activities and all the things he did, how he said. He argued against every kind of bogus person, really, very, very strongly. Some people have even said he's not following Lord Chaitanya, he's not humble. And he doesn't say yatama tatapat. Right? Everything. What, I'm all right, you're all right. Whatever you say, whatever I say. That's the famous thing of one so-called sannyasi. Yatama tatapat. Everything is all right. Nobody's right or wrong. That you get a lot of followers with that kind of talk. But the caste brahmanas were very much against him because he was initiating people that weren't born as brahmanas or sannyasis. He took one parikrama around Navadvip and the brahmanas threw stones at them, bricks, even at the elephant that was carrying the deity. But that made him more popular, that people saw these jati gosai, these born brahmanas who don't want any competition. You know how low class they were. One policeman came to him and he told him, I have to tell you, someone offered me 25,000 rupees to kill you. That's a lot of money in 1930. Now it's not very much. What is it now? $100? A couple hundred dollars. But the policeman said, normally I would do that, but I cannot kill a sadhu, so I just thought I'd kill him. But he didn't stop preaching because of that. And then he inspired Prabhupada And Prabhupada always said that people think I've done miracles, but my only value is that I followed my guru. I took the order of my spiritual master and strictly followed it. Didn't preach in the English world, but he completely presented the same thing in a more simple English. Otherwise, people would have trouble. But Prabhupada was empowered to write the English language in such a way that anybody can read it. A big scholar can say this is fantastic. 12-year-old child can read it. People where it's not their native, they learn English by reading it. Many devotees have learned English just by reading the Bhagavad Gita over and over again. It's such an amazing command of the English language. And it's translated everything he did. He was empowered by it. His other disciples at the temple where Prabhupada was living, he was a grihastha, he was helping them in many ways. And they were telling Bhaktisiddhanta he should move in the temple, he should be the president. He said, don't worry, he'll do everything in time. Don't bother him. And then there's a famous meeting at Radhakund. Bhaktisiddhanta, he went to Radhakund, he criticized all the Babaji's there. They still hate him. And he spoke for 1 month every night on the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they were, why doesn't he talk about the gopis? Why doesn't he talk about Radharani? He spoke on Isha Upanishad. And when Prabhupada met him there, and somehow, everyone else there was a big sannyasi in the mud, and Prabhupada somehow was with him alone. He told him there'll be fire in the Gaudiya Math. He knew he would be leaving soon. Don't get involved in it. He said, when we had this little house on Altadunga Road and everyone was preaching, it was so nice. But since somebody gave us this big marble temple, everyone is quarreling over position and which room they get, and a lot of money's coming in. He said, if I could sell the marble and print books, I would do that. So he told Prabhupada, if you get money, print books. So Prabhupada said he based his whole movement on that instruction. And actually, he printed books when he didn't even have money. He'd get credit, print a few books, just print a few at a time. He could only get the books from the printer as much as he could get money, then he could buy 10 books or something. Couldn't get full credit that they would print without the money, but they wouldn't give him books. Intelligent printing's like that. Even now, you get a short time to pay. You have to pay at least 50% deposit because that's the cost of the paper. And they won't buy the paper until you pay for it, in case you decide not to print. So, Prabhupada translated so many books. He didn't work with the God Brothers. They were disunited after Prabhupada, after his guru left. And they were not enthusiastic. He was helping Juan to edit one of the magazines that was still going on. And Prabhupada made a deal with the printer that he could print twice as many for the same price. And the sannyasi of that mud said, no, no, too much trouble to distribute them. Just keep it small. Prabhupada couldn't work with those people. So he went to America where they were afraid to go anywhere. And he started the ISKCON. And we see what happened. We were watching last night a movie of the early days. It was phenomenal. We should show it here a little bit. How many devotees joined in just a few years in America and England. Australia, it happened also a little bit later. And what they did, huge Rath Yatra. They built these Rath Yatra carts that took up the two lanes. Right? And they built them in a few months. 1 month. And everything themselves. They didn't hire anybody. You know, when Prabhupada said do something, they didn't say, okay, we'll go and hire a carpenter. They just did it. Amazing. Krishna sent people that could do everything. Artists, writers, you know, even computer people back when there was no computers. But Prabhupada was just trying to do what his guru wanted, to distribute books everywhere, give the knowledge of Krishna. So we're trying to do that. Here we're a small group in Lagos trying to do that. We have some books. I wanted to bring one back. Everybody, if everybody distributes the one or, you know, a few books, it becomes many. Christmas, good time to give gifts. You know, right? One Mataji, my god sister, had to go to the Citibank in Delhi, and she gave everybody prasadam and Bhagavad Gita, and they were really happy. They said, this is the best present I ever got. So, we'd like for you to take some books, if you can give a donation, but these books were donated by one devotee in Columbus, Ohio. His name is Prem Vilas. He's a disciple of Radhanath Swami, temple president there, and he's a doctor. And he came to Ghana a couple years ago for the Rath Yatra. So he wanted to distribute books. There were very few books at the time. And he talked to people. He saw, yeah, they like the books. They're interested, but they don't have much money. So then he said, I'll give as many books as you can distribute. So far he's done it. He's even got another friend doing it, helping him. So we just received a container the other day full of books. Now in the temple we have only Bhagavad Gita. They distributed all the other ones. And that was in about a year also. A lot of books. So many small books. But of course we don't get much money for them. I look in the bookshop in the airport. Books were like, the cheapest one we saw was, what, 3,000? No, there was 2,900. A lot of books were 4,900. Paperback books, no pictures. Just some crummy novels from America. You can buy in any other country in the secondhand shop for 50 cents. But we want people to have the book, and generally in this country, the people who are curious and interested in religious or not, they don't have money. People with money are busy with other things. So we don't care, because Krishna wants to help everybody. So we're asking everybody, take some books, one book, two books, 10 books. Somehow or other, give them to somebody. Right? Send them to a friend in India. But there's many people here you meet in your work or whatever. You give it, nobody refuses a gift, you know. Right? So please, we have, still at the temple, we have so many books. The Delhi temple also donated 1,000 Bhagavad Gita. And we're getting more and more books. And people really like them, you know, devotees distribute them. Nigerians like to read. And this is the, what is it? Fort Harcourt was called the book capital of the world. They have posters all over. Have you read a book today? You know, the Bombay Times had a big billboard, you are what you read. Read the Bombay Times. I was thinking you should read the Bhagavad Gita. That would be better. You don't want to become a newspaper, you know, and then just get wiped, you know, thrown and wrapped up the garbage, right? If you're a newspaper. But if you become the Bhagavad Gita, you'll be worshipped. So reading it is very good. Distributing it will help you to understand it more. That's the science. Krishna says there's no one more dear to me than one who gives this knowledge, who teaches this knowledge. So who will take one book, two books? Right? You have some here already? Huh?
Books from the temple.
Yeah, you have already here?
I don't have it.
You should, no, but that's reading. just for your personal use. You should be giving it. At least you should have a pile of them somewhere, so if people come and see them, you know, you have them in your office, people might ask you, what is that? You give it to them. In Togo, one Indian man, he's the High Commissioner of Togo or something, and he's very helpful, helped us get this society registered. And his wife, he had an African wife, she died, and so he was, and I was telling the devotee there, give him the books, because they had a lot of books in French books. They had Bhagavatam, Four Cantos, or something. And this devotee, oh, you got to get money, you got to get money. You know, so I forced him, give him the books. You know, he's helped us so much. So he ended up, because many big African people coming in his office, and he had the books on the desk, they'd say, what's that beautiful book? And they wanted it. So he ended up buying many, many from the temple to give his African friends. Then they were saying, you know, we've read that whole fourth canto, where can we get more? And they had Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was telling them, you can send to France. I said, no, give them that one. But you'd be surprised, you know. These people are spiritual seekers. They all go to church and they're reading their Bible, but many are not happy with the general direction the churches are taking, just promoting materialism and prosperity. They know better. They know that's all temporary, but they don't know what to do. So, how many would you like? You can be the, since it's your house. Huh? Okay, take 10. Take 10. Alright? And if you can give a donation to help the temple. We get the books for free, but clearing them costs money. And transportation to distribute them costs money. They get a little bit from people give. Some people give 500, some people give 100. We don't worry about it. Even in Bombay, the devotees were distributing books on the road, you know. I said, well, he said, we just say donation. Some people give 10 rupees, they give them Bhagavad Gita. Some people give 1,000. And you become very happy. You'll be surprised how happy. So anybody else want to volunteer?
Anybody else? I mean, how many?
50.
Five. Oh. Wow. I hope we brought that many. You brought only 60, right? Well, we can give you more later. You can take whatever we have left over. I thought 60 would be quite a bit. That's wonderful. What's your name? Kumar, yeah, oh good. That's Krishna's name. Young boy. So we have one box is 20, right?
30. Yeah, not one box.
Huh?
20.
30. Oh, really? Then we have more.
20.
Yeah.
Bombay we get 32. One box.
Hindi. That might be Hindi.
Okay, 32.
Hindi books are smaller. Hindi books.
I am having so many, but I will take one with your autograph because. Yeah, we asked
for distribution. Oh, really? Well, that's
good.